We're holding on page 76 in Sanhedrin, and the last line, a few lines into Aesthetic Aleph. We started learning yesterday that there were a number of things that Yoav, David's nephew and general, had done during his lifetime, which made him potentially Chayev Misa. So in the end, even though David was never able to deal with it during his lifetime, he depended on Yoav too much, and Yoav was too popular with the people. But he tells Shlomo before he passes away, see to it that you deal with the matter and that you have Yoav executed. So we started learning yesterday that when Yoav, after Shlomo had become king, and the last straw was in fact that Yoav had supported Adoniyahu, David's older brother, in trying to become king. Shlomo's older brother, yes. So did I say David's? I meant Shlomo's, yeah. So we know it's in the Haftarah of Chayesara that as soon as David found out, he immediately gave orders that they should crown Shlomo as king. So Adoniyahu and all of his people are Modim and Malchus, and Yoav was one of them. Anyway, so sure enough, the pasuk tells us that that Yoav ran off and held on to the corners of the Mizbeach, and Shlomo sends Benayahu ben Yehoyada, his new general, and tells him, kill him, and get him out of there and kill him, and he goes and tells him, come out of there, and Yoav says no. And we started talking about what's going on, that Yoav says to Benayahu, years ago, when I killed Avner, David cursed me and my descendants with 5 curses, and now it wouldn't be right that now also he's going to order that he, through Shlomo, is going to order my death. So if that's going to happen, then you have to, then he tells Benayahu, tell Shlomo, you're going to have to take the curses on yourself. And Shlomo says, fine, I will do that. So we quoted the pasuk that the king Shlomo says to Benayahu, fine, do as he said with Gavoy, and you'll strike him and kill him, or Kvartoy, and you'll bury him. The main thing is Shlomo says, as he goes on to say in the pasuk, you know, I have to fulfill what David said, and we have to avenge the deaths of the two people that he killed, Avner and Amasa, as we're going to go now through and learn the whole story. But first, the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav. So it comes out. So again, David had cursed Yoav and his descendants with 5 curses. So now that Shlomo took them back on himself, Kol Klolos Shekilo Davidus Yoav. Sure enough, all those curses that David put on Yoav, Niskaimu Bizarre Shal David, all of them came true with David's own descendants. Namely, what were the 5? There should never be cut off, there should never disappear from the house of Yoav. Zov, we know a Zov is a very severe kind of tumor. Or Metzora. Or Machzik Bapelach. Machzik Bapelach literally means somebody who holds on to a spindle. It means somebody who is lame and has to use a spindle as a tool for spinning thread, but it has a very large, one part of it is a very large stick, so a person could use it as a walking stick. So machzik bapelach means somebody who can't walk properly and has to use a walking stick. The nofel b'cherev, who falls by the sword, is killed by the sword. V'chasau lochem, or is lacking bread. So again, David had said that as a result of Yoav having killed Amasa, then he and his descendants should always suffer from one or another of these 5 things. Now that Shlomo took the curse on himself and his descendants, so sure enough, among Malchus based David, we find people who suffered from each one of those 5 things. Now, each of them had their own averus, or many of them at least had, the Mashro points out, many of them had their own averus that made them liable for these punishments, but still, they wouldn't necessarily have happened in this way if it hadn't been for this klala. They might have gotten away, Hashem might have let them get away with a lesser punishment. So let's go through them. Zov Merechavam. Which one of David's and Shlomo's descendants was a Zov? Rechavam, the son and successor of Shlomo. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, after, so you have the story in Melachim where after when Rechavam is supposed to be accepted as king by the people, they tell him, we want you to go easier on us. Shlomo made us pay high taxes and then made people do a lot of forced labor for all of his building projects. You go easier on us. Rechavam consults with his advisors. We learned earlier in the Masechta. He tells them, no, I'm going to be even harsher on you. So Pen of the Shvatim said, never mind. We don't want Rechavam. We don't want his kingship. We don't want nothing. And they went and seceded and appointed Yeravam as their king. Now then the pasuk describes, Rechavam didn't realize yet at that point how serious the rebellion is. So he sent his tax collector, a fellow named Adoram, to talk to them, whether to collect taxes or whatever. And the pasuk says they stoned him to death. So now Rechavam realizes it's serious. If he stays there any longer, they're going to do the same thing to him. So the pasuk says, "Vamelech Rechavam, his amets lalos b'merkava." King Rechavam put in effort to get up onto his chariot, lonus Yerushalayim, to run away to Yerushalayim. This to the whole thing up till now had taken place in Shechem. That was where they had gathered to crown him, and now he had to run off to Yerushalayim. Now, what does that have to do with Azov? Uchtiv, we find by Azov, v'chol amerkav asher yirkav olav Azov yitma, where it also mentions something that he rides on, like a saddle or whatever, that anything that Azov rides on becomes tomei. So the word merkav and merkava over here by Rechavam teaches us that Rechavam was Azov. So he ended up suffering from that curse that David had originally put on Yoav. The Yerushalmi, when it brings a different point as well, that not so much the word Merkava, but the fact that it says he's amates, he had to put in the effort to get onto the chariot, implying, therefore, so one thing, a person becomes a Zav, he tends to be bodily weaker. Like this, you have the zivus is similar to shichas zera, but it's a different consistency, and it comes out without kishui, etc. So it comes when there's some kind of disease or weakness in that part of the body, and therefore the fact that the pasuk says he's amitz, that he had to exert himself to get up on the chariot, indicates that he had that weakness of a zav. You find that after Rechavam had been king for a couple of years, that he and his advisors started worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing other Averas, and shortly after that they were invaded by Shishak Melech Mitzrayim. So the fact that he's a Zov over here can also kind of mean metaphorically, like he wasn't as strong in his Yiddishkeit as he should have been, and therefore he ended up going the wrong way. Okay. Anyway, so that's the Zov. Mitzora, Me'uziyahu. We have Uziyahu, one of the kings of Yehuda, became a Metzora. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes how he had been very successful in his kingship, as he got very strong, his heart became prouder to a destructive degree, by Yimal Ba'Hashem Alekov, and he was disloyal to Hashem, by Yovel Heichel Hashem Lahakti on Mizbechat Todas. He came into the Heichel to bring Todas on the Mizbeach. So he imagined that it would be an honor to Hashem that he, the king, should come in and offer Keturis, the special korban, and he didn't pay attention to the fact that Keturis is only meant for the descendants of Aaron, for the Kohenim. So the pasuk says that he came in to bring Keturis. Uchtiv, and a couple of psukim later it says that Tzaras zorcha b'mitzchay, Tzaras shone forth on his forehead. So we see that he became a Metzora. Now again, he deserved a punishment for having gone and tried to bring Ketores, but it didn't necessarily have to be Tzaras, and not necessarily on his forehead either. In fact, the Orach Haner makes a point, Tzaras, fine, you have actually last week's parasha in Parshas Korach, where Hashem says that Tasha Dibur Hashem Biyad Moshe Lord actually points out that it means from now on anybody who argues against the Kahuna is not going to get swallowed up into the ground like Korach and company did. Rather, he's going to get Saras like Biyad Moshe, like happened to Moshe's hand in Parshas Shmos. So fine. So he's going to get Saras, but why daft on the forehead? So actually what it is the Orach Haner explains the fact that he got it on the forehead has to do with the fact that he fought against the Kahuna. So therefore, it's on his forehead, the same place where the Kohen Gadol wears the tzitz. But the fact that it was tzaras at all, the fact that he didn't get away with a lesser punishment, is because it goes back to that curse of David's hundreds of years earlier. Next. Machzik Bapelach, when you have one of David's descendants who had to hold on to a staff, who couldn't walk straight, Me'osa, that you have Osa, who was the great grandson of Shloima. So he's after Shloima, you have Rechavam, then Aviam, and then Osa. And the pasuk says, "Rakla is siknosay chola es raglav." In his old age, he became sick in his feet. So therefore, in other words, he couldn't walk properly, and he would have needed a cane, a pelach, in order to walk. Now again, Marashah points out, the Gemara tells us in Sota, the reason he basically also was a tzaddik, but the reason he got that is because at one point during his reign, he put Talmid Chachamim at forced labor. He forced everybody to come and participate in a building project that he needed to do, and he drafted Talmid Chachamim for that as well. So for that, he got punished in his feet. Nevertheless, again, had it not been for David's curse, as Marashah says, he might have gotten back, and might have let him get away with something, with some kind of lesser punishment. So what exactly when we say chola es raglav, he was sick in his feet, what kind of sickness? He was struck, he was seized with podagra. Podagra in English is called gout. It's a very painful foot disease. Actually, it can appear in other places in the body as well, but it's very common for it to appear in the feet particularly. Interestingly, Rashi says that the word podagra for it comes from Greek. Means basically something like foot pain, but Rashi points out that in our language, in the French of Rashi's times, it went by the same name as well. Nowadays, in modern French, I think it has a different name, but there's a number of the languages of Europe where they talk to use the word podagra or something very similar for it for this disease. In English, it's called gout. Amalei Mazutra, brother of Nachman, not of Nachman. So Mazutra, the son of Reb Nachman, asks his father, Reb Nachman, Heichidomi, what exactly is podagra like? So Reb Nachman tells him, "Kemachat b'basar achai." It feels like a needle sticking into living flesh. So the Gemara says, "Menor yoda." Well, how does Reb Nachman know that? So a few possibilities. One possibility is that Reb Nachman himself suffered from podagra, from gout. Another possibility could be that Reb Nachman learnt from his Rebbe about what it was like. The Boisema, or a third possibility, which the Gemara uses in a number of places in Shas, as the Pasuk says, Sod Hashem Lirei, of the secrets of Hashem, belong to those who fear him, Uvriso Lahidia, and Hashem, and Hashem tells them his covenant, meaning we find in different places where the Gemara mentions, this is in Sota, in a couple of places as well, and some other things that the Gemara assumes that the Chachamim are able to know certain facts, certain natural facts, with Ruach HaKodesh, even if Derech HaTeva, they would have had no way of knowing them. Over here in connection with this, and the Gemara gives some other examples of it here and there. One interesting example of it is currently in Daf HaYomi, we're learning Perek Eru Treifas, all about the different conditions that make an animal treifa or not, and many of them are things that the sciences and the doctors and the scientists of those times had no idea about, but the Chachamim knew, and one reason is because Sod Hashem Lirei, because Hashem gives these secrets over to those who fear him. In any case, the point is that Ossa had gout, and again, therefore he couldn't walk straight. He had to use a cane, so he's the Machzik Bapelach. Next, Noifo Bacherev. The next one of David's curses was that Yoav's descendants, and now we're saying it bounces back on David himself. And one of them is Noifo Bacherev. He falls by the sword. That would be specifically Yoshiyahu. So specifically, that would be Yoshiyahu, one of the last kings of Yehuda. He was a great tzaddik, but the Gemara tells us the Pesukim in Divrei Yomim tell us the story, and the Gemara in Tainus fleshes out the story that basically the king of Mitzrayim of that time, Paran Nechoi, wanted to pass through Eretz Yisrael to go to a place in Bavel where he's gonna fight a battle, and he asked Yoshiyahu for permission to go through Eretz Yisrael, and Yoshiyahu refused him permission for reasons that the Gemara explains over there, and so Paran Nechoi went to war against the Jews and ended up killing Yoshiyahu in the battle. And the pasuk says, "Vayodu hayodim lamelach Yoshiyahu." The archers shot at King Yoshiyahu and killed him. And what's this? "Vayodu hayodim." The Omer of Yehuda Amarav should also call Gufei Kikvara. They made his entire body like a sieve. They shot him with hundreds of arrows. The Medrash says they shot him with 300 arrows. And fine, 300 sometimes is used as a guzma, but he was shot with an enormous number of arrows. So apparently the Gemara is assuming that being killed by arrows is basically similar enough to being killed by the sword, maybe because in both cases you have a lot of blood coming out. Maushra points out there were a number of other kings of Yehuda who were assassinated as well, but it never specifically says they were assassinated by the sword. Here you have by Yoshiyahu, you have not only that they shot him, but you have to point out, that Maushra seems to understand, not just they shot him with arrows, but they also pierced him with their swords from close up. So there really was Noifo Bacheren. By the way, the Medrash says on it, actually the Gemara brings on it in Tainus, that before Yoshiyahu passed away, Yirmiyahu was there also, and he bends over to hear Yoshiyahu's last words, and Yoshiyahu sounds like he wants to say something. He's going to complain against Hashem, how come he had to suffer such a horrible death. Yirmiyahu bends over and hears Yoshiyahu's last words, which later on he put into Eicha, Tzadiku Hashem kifil marisi, Hashem is righteous that I disobeyed him. Because here Yirmiyahu had told Yoshiyahu, the Gemara tells us, allow Paran and Choy through, don't try to block him. And Yoshiyahu thought he knew better, based on his Darashas of Pesukim, so now he, in his last moments, he recognized that he was wrong and he should have listened to the Navi after all. By the way, later on, also Yirmiyahu composed the entire Perek Dalet of Eicha, even though on the surface it's talking about the horrors of the siege and everything of Yerushalayim, but really that whole capital, the Perek Dalet of Eicha, is really a kina about Yirmiyahu, about the death of Yirmiyahu, the tzaddik. He was very young too. He was only 39 years old when he was killed in this battle.
He
became king at 8, and he ruled for 31 years. Yeah. No, 12 was Menashe, you're thinking of. Yoshio was 8, yeah.
Shlomo
was 12, yeah. Okay, onward. So Yoshio is the Neufel Bacherev. He's the one among David and Shlomo's descendants where he fell and was killed by the sword. And the last one, V'chasau Lechem Mi'Yechonia. Where do we have who among David's descendants, among the kings, was lacking bread? Is Yechonia, the next to last king of Yehuda. So he was taken. He was taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. We talked about that a little bit in an earlier poem of Or Masechta, and he was in jail in Babel for many years. And then the pasuk describes at the end of Malachim, at the end of Yirmiyah, that finally after Nebuchadnezzar died and his son Evel Merodach took over, so he let Yechonia out of jail, and the pasuk and he gave him honorable clothing and everything, and the pasuk finishes off. His meal is his stipend of food. Aruchas Tomid Nitoloi was given to him as a constant stipend of food. Rashi says it was from Nebuchadnezzar. Marashah says, to be exact, actually, from the Psukim, it comes out that it was Evel Merodach. But what it would mean is that either way, the question is, how exactly is that Chasar Lochem? On the contrary, means he had lots of food. So Marashah explains what it means is, Evel Merodach started giving him a regular large amount of food as befits a former king, and therefore from then on he wasn't Chasar Lochem. But all the 37 years he was in jail before that, under Nebuchadnezzar, they gave him some food, otherwise he would have died, but not very much, and therefore all those years he was chasar loch and he was lacking bread. They actually found, by the way, interestingly, they found in the ruins of Nebuchadnezzar's palace, they found a fragment of a list over there where he lists a number of captive kings from different countries in that part of the world that were being held in the jail over there and were being given stipends of food, and one of them is Yoyachin Melech Yehuda. So we see that all five of these curses came back and bounced back on David and Shlomo and their descendants, on David and Shlomo's descendants. Amr of Yehuda Amar Rav, so the Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Hainu Da'amri Inshi, this is like the popular expression, people say, Tehei Luta V'loi Tehei Malatata or Laita. Better you should be the one who is cursed rather than the one who curses others. Because here we see, in other words, it's a Kilas Chinam, you see that it's a needless curse. And there's an expression in the pasuk, "Kitzipur nedeges min kina," like a bird that's flitting around from its nest, "Kein kilas chinam loy savay." The same way, an empty curse, loy savay, and you actually have a kriyuk siv over there. It's written loy with an aleph and pronounced loy with a vav. So loy with an aleph will mean it will not come true. Loy with a vav means it will come to him. So in other words, the one who gives the unnecessary curse, it ends up bouncing back on him. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, in the name of Rab, better you should be the one who's cursed by others rather than the one who curses others, because then it's going to end up back on you. And in this case, now, when David originally said it, it wasn't necessarily a kilas chinam, but now, years later, when he gives Shlomo instructions to have Yoav executed, so now, retrospectively, it comes out to be a kilas chinam. In fact, the Radak on the pasuk points out even more than that. To begin with, David would have liked to kill Yoav. He couldn't at the time, but he still had in mind that when he has the opportunity to, he will, so then what's he doing cursing him, so therefore it can be considered kilas chinam. Okay. H. Yosef, by the way, points out an interesting point, that the five things that David said, these five curses, are an increasing order of severity. So the Metzorah is worse than the Zov, the Machzik Bapelach is worse than the Metzorah, and so forth. That is why the Gemara insisted on explaining that what happened with Asa and his feet was specifically Podagra. If it had just been some kind of that his feet were sore or whatever, then it wouldn't be worse than Metzorah. But once you're saying that it was Podagra, it was Kemachat B'Basar Achai, like a needle in living flesh, so therefore we understand that it's even worse in some ways than Saras. And therefore, so it really goes in an ascending order like that. Okay. Now, what? These were all kings. These were all kings from Malchus Beis Ovid. Well, Rechavam was so-so. He started out okay, but then he went bad. He did Tshuva afterwards, but still he wasn't one of the better kings. Let's see. Uzziyahu was fairly good. It was Yoav was one of the better kings. Also was one of the best ones. He was one of the ones who was a tzaddik. Yoshiyahu was one of the greatest tzaddikim among them. Yechaniah, we learned before, as a king, he was no good, but then he did tshuva in jail. Yeah, that's a mix among them. That's the thing. Maharsha points out, with many of them, you can attribute what happened to them to a particular aveira of theirs. Uzziyahu trying to offer k'todas, also drafting some of the chachamim for his building project, etc. But nevertheless, again, had it not been for this curse, then Hashem might have let them off with some easier punishment. So now the Gemara says, Asiyu le Yoav. So now they brought Yoav Dainei, and he's judging him. Who is judging him? There's a lot of discussion among the Mephoshim. Do we mean that now Yoav is being brought in front of the Sanhedrin? Now, we learned yesterday that was actually, according to one opinion, what Yoav wanted. We started talking about yesterday, according to the Chachamim, a murdered b'malchus, somebody who rebels against the king, then his property is confiscated and taken over by the king. So we learned yesterday, according to that opinion, Yoav did not want that to happen. So he says, fine, if I have to die, better let me be judged by the Sanhedrin rather than by the king. If I'm judged by the Sanhedrin, then at least then my nechasim go to my heirs. So according to that, then, they are doing what Yoav wanted, and they're bringing him to the Sanhedrin to be judged. According to the other way of looking at it, it means that Shlomo is judging him, but the Mephoshim will actually say it's kind of a combination, because Shlomo was sitting together with the Sanhedrin and judging him. Another possibility is the Gemara mentions elsewhere that B'nayohu ben Yehoyada, besides, the Gemara mentions in Berachas, B'nayohu ben Yehoyada, besides being Shlomo's general-in-chief, he was also the head of the Sanhedrin. So therefore it can be the Sanhedrin is judging him, and B'nayohu, as Shlomo's second trusted in command, is the one who's presiding over it. So that would explain why you have the expression Dainei in the singular. Agoyz Habach actually changes it to the plural, but with the singular that we have over here, it would mean maybe Shlomo or Benayahu presiding over the Sanhedrin and judging him. Okay, so now we have to give a little background with what happened with Yoav with the people that he killed. So let's start with Avner. We talked about yesterday, Avner was a relative of Shaul. He was Shaul's general throughout Shaul's kingship. After Shaul was killed in battle by the Plishtim, then Avner supported Ish-bosheth, the one surviving son of Shaul, and made him king. He was basically the power behind the throne. During that time, so for a while over there, for a couple of years, there were two rival kings. David is ruling over Shevet Yehuda, and Ish-bosheth is ruling over the rest of the Shevatim. During that period, it describes in Sefer Shmuel that at one point there was a battle. There was basically a cold war between the two sides. But at one point, it describes over there how it became a hot war. It started with that one day Avner's and Yoav's men met up in a certain place, and Avner proposed a duel between the two sides. And the upshot of it is that it became a whole war between the two sides. So the Pesukim describe over there how Asoel, a brother of Yoav, and therefore one of the people on David's side, is chasing after Avner, apparently with intent to kill him. Asoel, the Pesuk says over there, was an extremely fast runner. The Medrash says on Asoel, he was so fast a runner that if he were to run on a field of wheat, on a field of stalks of wheat growing, the stalks wouldn't even bend under his weight because he would run so fast. So now he's chasing after Avner with intent to kill. And the Pesukim describes several times Avner yells behind him and tells him, go, leave me alone. If you keep on chasing me, you're a roidif and I'm going to have to kill you. Be that as it may, Asoel did not give up. He's getting closer and closer. So finally Avner takes out a sword and hits Asoel, who's running behind him, and hits him El Achoymish at the fifth rib, and that was it. Asoel was killed. A little later after that, eventually the war was over, eventually each side took their dead and went home. Later on, that's in Shmuel Bey's Perek Bey's. Later on, Shmuel Bey's Perek Gimel, Avner and Ish-bosheth have a falling out. Avner says, I don't care for you, Ish-bosheth, anymore. You can do whatever you want. I'm leaving you and I'm going over to David's side, and I'm going to get all the rest of the Shvatim to join David, and you'll be left out in the cold. So Avner goes to David. We touched on this a little bit yesterday. Avner goes to David, tells him, I'm coming over to your side, and I'm going to get ready. I'm going to go and bring all the other Shvatim over to your side, so you'll rule over the unified Jewish people and not only over Shevet Yehuda. Good. So Avner leaves to start doing that. Meanwhile, Yoav comes back to Hebron, which was Zobit's capital all the time, finds out that Avner has been there. He's very upset about it. As far as he knows, Avner is not to be trusted. All these years he's been Shaul's guy and then Ishbosheth's guy. How do you know he's coming here on a legitimate mission? Maybe he's coming as a spy. In any case, so Yoav took matters into his own hands and went and lured Avner back into Hebron and killed him over there. And as one of that. Now, on one level, in other words, he's killing him because he has his suspicions of him. On another level, he's killing him because he had killed Yoav's brother, Asael, which makes Yoav the Goyal Adam, which therefore gets into the question now, well, was Avner justified in killing Asael? So that's going to be the first part of that we're going to discuss here in the Gemara. Years and years later, so again, Yoav killed Avner, David was very upset about it, he cursed Yoav, as we talked about before. Years and years pass. Yoav is still serving for many years as David's general. Eventually, a few years before David passed away, it was David's 36th or 37th year or so of kingship, is when Avshalom, David's son, revolted against him. And now Avshalom needs himself a general, so he picks Amasa, who is also a nephew of David, which makes so he's a nephew of David and a cousin of Yoav, and he's related to Avshalom also, because after all, Avshalom is David's son, so and he appoints him as his general. Avshalom's revolt fails, Avshalom himself is killed, all his people give up, and they all return to David's side. At this point, David is very angry with Yoav. In particular, Yoav had killed Avshalom, even though David gave explicit instructions not to. So David wants to just be rid of Yoav at this point. He tells Amasa, you will be my new general. Shortly after that, another revolt breaks out. A fellow named Sheva ben Bichri starts a new revolt against David. Ein lanu chelik b'David v'le'nachla b'ben Yishai. We have no portion in David. We have nothing. We don't need anything from the son of Yishai. Everybody go home, and we don't need David as our king. So they have to get together the army as fast as possible and crush this rebellion before it gets out of hand. So David tells Amasa, his new general, go gather together the troops and go start chasing him and be back here in 3 days. The Pasuk says that Amasa was late getting back. So David tells Yoav, fine, you know what, you go gather together the army and get going. We gotta nip this thing in the bud. On the way, Yoav meets up with Amasa and kills him. What for? So now, on one level, you could say, if you learn the psukim without understanding what Yoav was, you're going to understand that Yoav is jealous that Amasa is going to take over his position. But as we're going to see in the Gemara over here, Yoav had a valid claim that Amasa was a Mori B'Malchus for disobeying David. So now, when Yoav himself is on trial in front of the Sanhedrin, so we have to deal with both those things. Did he have any justifiable basis for killing Avner, and did he have any justifiable basis for killing Amasa? And then, once we deal with all of that, then there's the matter that he's a Murid B'Malchus because he went and supported Adoniyahu when he knew that Shlomo is supposed to be the next king. So now we're going to go through that whole thing. So, Asyula Yoav, so they brought Yoav Dine, and he's judging him. The first charge, Amalei, so they ask him, he asks him, whether it's Shlomo or Benayahu, or they ask him, the Sanhedrin, my time of Kataltila Avner, why did you kill Avner? Amalei, so Yoav answers, Goyal Adam da Asael Havoi, I was Asael's Goyal Adam, Asael was my brother, Avner killed him, I'm entitled as a Goyal Adam to kill Avner. So they say, Asael Roidat Hava, yeah, but I said, Asael was a roidev. He was chasing after. Avner with intent to kill. Amalei. So Yoav says, fine. But hoyel alatsila ba'echad me'evorav. But still, Avner could have saved Asael from doing such a serious avera by wounding him in one of his limbs. In other words, he could have injured him in the arm or the leg or something, and then Asael would have backed off. Why do you have to kill him? Then that makes him a ritzeach, and therefore he should be chayev misa, and I, as the goyal adam, should be entitled to do that. Tosfos points out, by the way, there was no Asra or anything over here, but actually, that'll be as far as Amasa soon. We'll get to Amasa. But meanwhile, then Yoav has a claim that Avner killed Asael unjustly, and because he could have been in Alatsula, which is the Gemara deals with that point later in the Masechta, and therefore I had the right to kill Avner as me being the Goyal Adam of Amasa. So Amalei, so they told Yoav, Loi have a Yochalei. Maybe look, I mean Avner is in a hurry over there. Asoil is gaining on him. He's right behind him. So maybe Avner wasn't able to aim properly. Now the halacha is, it is true that when it comes to a roidif, you do have to try to disable him rather than killing him. But they're saying, look, I mean Asoil is chasing after Avner. Maybe Avner, Pasha, doesn't have the ability to davka to aim for his arm or his leg or something. So he banged him with the back of the spear, and it so happened he hit him in a place that he killed him. But Yoav says to them, Hashtab Dothan Khamishis Kivinlay, consider he actually managed to hit him Davka in the fifth rib. He hit him with the butt of the spear, with the handle of the spear at the Choymesh. And what is the Choymesh? Specifically that means the fifth rib, which is a place where the gallbladder and the liver hang. So in other words, that's a very vulnerable spot at a person is struck there, then it can kill him right away. We have a number of times, actually, in Sefer Shmuel, where somebody was struck El HaChoymesh and died on the spot. So it's apparently a very vulnerable spot. So therefore, so Yoav is arguing that Avner very much knew what he's doing, and Davka aimed for that part. Now, why did he have to do that? He could have instead aimed for some other part of Asoil's body and not had to kill him. So if he instead chose to do that, then Yoav argues that makes Avner a Ritzeah, and therefore me as the Goyal Adam, I'm entitled to do something about it. So you're telling me that he was able to hit him there, Be'echad Me'evar of La'yochelei? You're telling me he wouldn't have been able to hit him in one of his other limbs? Amalei, so fine, whoever is presiding over the case, Amalei says, Nezel Avner. Fine, let's set the case of Avner aside. Fine, Rashi says, we can say, fine, you're potter for killing Avner, you have a valid point, Avner had no business killing your brother Asoil, and therefore you have a valid point that you were the Goyal Adam. Now, Marashah points out when Benayahu finally confronts Yoav, which we started learning yesterday and continued today, and he tells him that Shlomo sent me to kill you, and Yoav sends back Benayahu with a message, and Benayahu goes and reports to Shlomo, and Shlomo says, well, he does have to be killed because he killed two people who shouldn't have been killed, namely Avner and Amasa. Now, based on what we're saying over here, it comes out on the face of it he had a right to kill Avner after all. So Marashah says, okay, that was according to the have Amina. So that was according to what they had thought that in fact Avner had no choice and therefore he's not guilty and therefore Yoav shouldn't have killed him. The other possibility is that that we're saying that if Yochel lahatzel atzmo the echad me'evarav and he didn't, then he's chayev. Not everybody agrees to that. Some say that even though he should try to disable the roidif, nevertheless, if he does end up killing him, he's not chayev for it. Well, then in that case, also, then you can say that this whole argument that he could have aimed for someplace else and didn't wouldn't really fit according to that. The Noisa Kalim on the Rambam actually talk about the Rambam Taka holds that not only that the Rambam writes flat out that actually if you have a roidif and somebody actually kills him instead of lahatzel ba'echad me'evarav, then that person who did that is actually chayav misa. So they deal with so the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam deal with how would the Rambam understand the story in the Gemara over here and the whole back and forth over here, and in the end we're saying Nezel Avner. So one answer is when they say Nezel Avner, they don't mean fine, you actually potter for killing Avner. They're just saying fine, you know what, let's set that aside. We have other grounds to convict you on anyway, so whether we're going to accept your argument or not is really irrelevant because we have other charges to bring against you anyway. Another point, actually, one of the Mephoroshim makes, I think the Mishnah Lamelech makes a point that even if, fine, you could say that maybe therefore Avner is not actually Chayav Misa for killing Asoil, but nevertheless, you have cases where a person is not Chayav Misa, but still the Goyal Adam can get him, so they can accept Yoav's argument, fine, Avner is maybe not Chayav Misa for killing Asoil, especially Tosfos points out anyway, there was no Edim Asura, but in any case, that still doesn't mean that Yoav maybe shouldn't have a right after all to kill him as a Goyal Adam. We have a number of examples like that where a person kills Beshogig or Shogig Kord of Lamezid or whatever, and the halacha is the Goyal Adam can still get him, even though Beis Din can't. Melech also has the right, but the whole point is we're saying that Yoav wanted to be judged by the Sanhedrin, so he doesn't have to be judged by the king and end up his property being forfeit. So therefore, so now they're saying Nezel Avner, fine, let's set aside the matter of Avner, let's go on to the next charge. Okay, so next. My time at Taltila Amosa. Why'd you kill Amosa? Now, here's where Tosfos points out that on the face of it, there was no Hasura over there. But Tosfos says, the fact is that as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that Yoav thought that Amosa was a murder of Malchus because he disobeyed David and didn't come in time, and really in the end was saying Yoav himself wound up being a murder of Malchus. So therefore, really, Hasura is not really a factor over here. In any case, so what happened? So why'd you kill Amosa? Amalei, so he says, Amosa murdered the Malchus Hava because Amosa disobeyed the king, which makes him Chayav Mesa. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, again, when this revolt of Sheva ben Bichri broke out, by Yirmeh HaMelech LaAmosa, Hazek Lias Ish Yehuda, Shloshes Yom Vagomer, the king tells Amosa, go and gather together to me the men of Yehuda, the soldiers of Yehuda, and be back here in 3 days. And the Pasuk says he wasn't. By Yelech Amosa LaHazek Lias Ish Yehuda, Amosa went to rally the men of Yehuda, by Yoicher Vagomer, but he was late coming back. Well, he's late. The king tells you he can be back here in 3 days, and he's not back there in 3 days. Yoav says the murder Malchus had every right to kill him.
Who determines that? Is that the king do, or is that supposed to be saying the murder Malchus?
Okay, you could argue that maybe it's fine, but the point is, at least you can't say that Yoav is so guilty for killing him that he himself should be Chayav Misa for it. And besides, I mean, look, Yoav was David's general. You know, right now he's been demoted as general temporarily. Although now David told him, look, if Amasa is late, then I have to take you back as general. Go gather together the army. But in any case, I mean, if there's one person that you could trust on the face of it to be dealing with who's a murdered Malchus, it would be Yoav, who's been now at this point David's top general for 30 odd years. So they told him no, because Amosa was actually correct in what he did. Amosa achin v'rakin dorash. Amosa knows how to darshin when the Torah says ach or rak, that it means a mute. Namely, what happened when Amosa went to rally the troops? Ashkechinu liyisrael to psiach lehu b'masechta. He found that the soldiers were busy learning a masechta of, they were learning, not a masechta as we have them, Torah Shabbat Peh was still Baal Peh, but they were learning a topic in Torah. And therefore he can't interrupt them. He can't interrupt them as important as it is to get them together to fight this war, to go and fight Sheva ben Bichri. He has no right to interrupt the Talmid Chachamim from their Masechta. So it comes out that when the soldiers are Oisik LaTorah, then we said before that also got himself in trouble for drafting Talmid Chachamim for his building project. If it's Pikuach Nefesh, maybe, but maybe it wasn't such an issue of Pikuach Nefesh at this point. Marashah points out that actually you find a Kriyuk Siv in the Pasuk over there. When it says by Yoicher, when it says that Amasa was late getting back, it's written with two Yuds, by Yicher, as if it sounds like. And then we read it by Yoicher. So therefore we doubtion, by Yicher means on his own. So by Yicher would be what Yoav is thinking. He himself, on his own, for whatever reason, decided to be late. That makes him a murdered b'malchus. But no, vayoicher means that he had a valid reason. He was delayed by others. Maharsho also says, vayoicher min amoyed, asher yo'odo, is the expression in the pasuk. He was late for the moyed that David had told him to be back in time. That means that they had just finished, they were just starting, a masechta in Seder Moyed, which they were learning, and therefore, so by Yerushim and Amoyed, he was late because of the Moyed, because now they're learning something in Seder Moyed, and he's not going to interrupt them. So what happens? Omar, so Amasa thinks to himself, Ksiv, after all, the Pasuk says, as we talked about yesterday, where's the source in Torah that a king has the right of life and death over people, and that if they're murdered by Malchus, then they can be killed? Because the Pasuk says, they said to Yeshua, Kol Isha Sheyamre Especha, anybody who disobeys what you say, Vole Yishma Zdoracha, and doesn't listen to what you speak, L'chol Asher Tetzavenu, everything that you command him, you must, will be put to death. So Yochal Afilu L'Divrei Torah, you would think that means that even if the Torah, if the king tells you to be mevatel words of Torah, Talmud Lomar, therefore the pasuk says Rak Chazak Ve'ematz, Rak, and Rak is a mute, be strong and be courageous. So we learn from that the limit on the king's power is if what he's saying goes against the Torah. And therefore, now, fine, when David sent Amasa, he didn't know that they distorted a Masechta, and therefore that it would be interrupting them. But now that Amasa comes and finds that out, then he realizes this Zach puts limits on the king's power, and therefore, if I wait until they finish their learning, and then I draft them, and then I bring them to David, then I'm not disobeying, and I'm not a Mered B'Malchus, and therefore, they're telling Yoav, you should have realized that, and therefore you had no business killing Amasa and claiming that he was a Mered B'Malchus. So we'll continue the story tomorrow, Beis Hashem. A little bit of the Gemara is brought in Makkos. In particular, it mentions over there when Yoav ran away to the Mizbeach, he made a number of mistakes. He didn't realize that the Mizbeach protects only a Kohen who's doing the Avodah. He didn't realize only the Mizbeach in the Beis Mikdash, etc. Yeah, there's a few mistakes over there. Continuing with, we started talking yesterday, the Rebbe talks about Nesicha, about the Aleph that's put into between the in Goyla to make it Geulos. Of course, we talked about yesterday that Aleph is Meloshon Aluf, that Hashem is the leader of the world. Another way, Aleph is also Meloshon Ufana, learning, Alefa Chachma, Alef Kabina. So it means, well, also lovely, we'll have a Gilui of Torah, where Alpaim Shana Kodma Torah Loilam, that means there'll be a Gilui of the course higher than the world, but still it still has a certain connection with the world. So it'll be revealed through the Torah, which Torah Kodma Loilam. So in other words, yesterday we were learning the idea that the Aleph of Goyla into Goyla to make Geula is that we see Gilui of the course within the world, the Erech to the world. Now we're talking about that it's higher than the world, but it still has a certain Erech to the world. It's through Torah. And then the third one we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, which is beyond the whole Metzius and the whole Gedder of the world in the first place. Continuing with Halachas of Tzitzis, we were learning about Ksus Yoim and Ksus Laila, what's Chayev and Potter in Tzitzis. So if a person is wearing a Talis Gadol during the daytime, so you would have to take it off when they say Baruch Hu by Ma'ariv. Because nowadays, when do we wear a talus? It's only the shame that's for tzitzis. If you wear it at night, then it's going to look as though you think that Lila, as though Lila's man tzitzis, and that's not the halacha. However, on Yom Kippur night, everybody puts on a talus gadol and makes the bracha before nightfall, and that's fine. You keep it on at night, because then it's a known thing. You're not wearing it the shame that's for tzitzis. There it's that we're wearing it in order to look like the malachim who wear white, or wear white clothing, or described by the Nevi'im as wearing and wrapped and robed in white clothing, and therefore we wear a talus at night on Yom Kippur, and that's not a problem. Then you also have, in this connection, when a person is davening by the Amud, even if it's just for Slichas, he also has to wear a Talis Gadol because of Kavod Sibur. Even for Kaddish Yosim, Yeshmisha Omer, that he should put on a Talis as well. So that kind of thing also you can do at night, because again, it's not the Shem, it's for Tzitzit, it's for Kavod Sibur. In Hayyam Yom, the first Hayyam Yom, if you're just Kislev, it says that our Minig is not to do that tackle. We don't put on a Talis for Mincha, or the one who davened by the Amud, for Mincha Mayriv, again, with the exception of Yom Kippur. As far as also in the Velt, people also often put on a talus for an aliyah, and that's not on minhag either. Unless, of course, you're wearing a talus because you're a married man anyway.